From Confession to Consolation, Commentary for the March 7, 2020 Sabbath School Lesson. By Stephen Terry, Director, Stillwaters Ministry, www.visitstillwaters.com. 77s are decreed for your people and your holy city to finish transgression, to put an end to sin, to atone for wickedness, to bring in everlasting righteousness, to seal up vision and prophecy, and to anoint the most holy place. Daniel 9:24. When examining the prophetic timelines of the book of Daniel in the Old Testament, there may be a questionable basis for the time prophecies of Daniel 8:14 and Daniel 9:24 having the same starting point. Daniel 9:24's 70 weeks are well identified as to its beginning, and using the year for a day principle, used when God appointed a year for each day the spies had traveled in Canaan for the wandering of the Israelites in the wilderness, it appears to work historically for the events regarding the advent and crucifixion of Christ. But in order to harmonize with the commencement of the investigative judgment in 1844, some have insisted that the Hebrew verb in 9:24 means cut off, and therefore must be referring to being severed from a larger timeline, the closest physically within the text of Daniel being the 2300 days of Daniel 8:14. However, the word more correctly means decreed or determined, as is correctly rendered in practically all translations, including the King James Version. This is also the translation given in William Holliday's authoritative work, A Concise Hebrew and Aramaic Lexicon of the Old Testament. The cut-off interpretation may have found its way into Adventism from John Gill's Exposition of the Bible Commentary, where such an interpretation is given. He does not say where he obtained the idea. John Gill was an English Baptist theologian who wrote in the mid-18th century, and his commentary was commonly used for reference during the Millerite era and the formative years of Seventh-day Adventism. They did not have the plethora of sources we now have for biblical study, and this meant that a single author, once published, could have a far greater influence over popular understanding than we might expect today. This means an error, even an unintentional one, could persist. We see an example of this influence in the commentary accompanying the Scofield Reference Bible of 1909, where the secret rapture doctrine was promoted and persists to the present, influencing later works by Hal Lindsey and others. Even though that doctrine is based on an interpretation, those who believe in the secret rapture are just as convinced in their belief as are many Seventh-day Adventists regarding the inerrancy of John Gill's interpretation of Daniel 9:24. Not surprisingly, Ellen White echoes John Gill's statement about the cut-off interpretation verbatim with her statement regarding Daniel 9:24 in The Great Controversy on page 326. Other scholars have pointed out repeatedly that she drew on secular historical sources for some portions of The Great Controversy, such as D'Aubigné's History of the Reformation of the 16th Century, published in 1800. While popular and important works in their time, some of the information from those sources has later been challenged. Should it be unusual that she should also draw on a popular non-Adventist theologian's commentary? However, it does bring into question our understanding of inspiration regarding the vision later claimed by Hiram Edson, which may have been influenced by William Miller, who himself may have based his understanding on Gill's statement concerning Daniel 9:24, made perhaps a century before his time. Ellen White's inspiration regarding the text may be a fruit of the same tree. It is possible that neither party knew directly of John Gill's statement and only received it via William Miller's exposure to it. We don't know. Since sources were not cited then as they are now, but even still, it does challenge our concept of inspiration. While it is impossible to say exactly what Ellen White read or didn't read without an index to her personal library, The language used and the coincidence bring up the question especially in view of the popularity of Gill's Exposition on the Bible. The Seventh-day Adventist Bible Commentary on Daniel 9:24 also states that they are going with the interpretation of cut off as opposed to determined, without citing the exact source of such an interpretation, except to say that it appears in post-biblical Hebrew. Sometimes what passes for scholarship in Adventist circles surprises me, because the author does not give a single example of such a reading. He does cite sources where the translation differs slightly, but not one that actually corroborates the translation cut off. Then, as if frustrated at his lack of a concrete reference example, he states the meaning must instead be derived from the context, and then begins a short diatribe of circular reasoning to arrive at his predetermined conclusion that it does indeed mean cut off. However, if as a denomination, Adventists believe in any degree in inspirational infallibility, it could be expected that the denomination's official commentary would necessarily be in harmony with the prophetess's statement, even if she was only quoting John Gill. The untoward influence of this interpretation of Daniel 9:24 became a focal point for a disappointed group of Millerites. William Miller had predicted the parousia would take place first in 1843, and then when that did not happen, in 1844, based apparently on the Gill-influenced assumption that the time period of Daniel 9:24 and Daniel 8:14 began running on the same date. When the parousia did not take place, rather than call into question this assumption, or even the idea of what the reconsecration or cleansing of the sanctuary might be referring to, this 19th century band of believers refused to admit that the calculation or the interpretation could be off. Into this stewpot came farmer and lay faith healer Hiram Edson with his own contribution. He proclaimed to the band of believers that were to become the nascent Seventh-day Adventist Church a couple of decades later that the reason nothing happened in 1844 was that it was all invisible due to taking place in heaven instead of on earth. This idea came to be known as the investigative judgment. Eventually, it was determined that this judgment had a process whereby it began with God's judgment of those who had died and would end with the living, and it begins with Christ entering the presence of God in the most holy place in the heavenly temple in 1844. Consequently, there has developed a heavy reliance on the priestly ministry of Christ described in Hebrews. There is some controversy regarding this interpretation, though, as Stephen, the deacon, when stoned by his persecutors, stated he could see Jesus standing at the right hand of God in Acts 7:56. If this is correct, then Jesus would have to leave the presence of God in order to re-enter his presence. While possible, there is no biblical account of such a separation taking place after the ascension. Admittedly, it is difficult to envision what takes place on a corporeal level with an ineffable God who is spirit and capable of omnipresence. This ready acceptance of Edson's vision may seem to some like a facile attempt to rationalize what had happened without abandoning the interpretation that apparently originated with Reverend Gill. However, to those believers, it provided an explanation they could run with and a defense against those who were accusing them of folly in setting a date for the second coming, a practice which the Bible says is futile in Matthew 24:36. Such an interpretation allowed them to deny they were in error and to escape the charge of date setting for the parousia. After all, it turned out it wasn't really the second coming they were predicting. It was the start of the judgment. One would think upon examining the fundamental statement of beliefs voted in Dallas in 1980 that very little of our theology depends on this doctrine of the investigative judgment. Without it, the denominational name remains intact, for the fact of the parousia is well-established Christian doctrine, and the Seventh-day Sabbath is also well-founded both biblically and in anti-Nicene Christianity. However, some have viewed the investigative judgment as a cross to die upon, even going so far as to defrock ministers who dared to question it. Yet this is the same church that several decades ago would also fire pastors who baptized individuals who chose to wear wedding rings, a practice that today is rarely, if ever, questioned, many ministers as well as lay members having taken up wearing them. If this doctrine on wedding rings, which was considered so vital only a short time ago, could be revisited, why not the idea of an investigative judgment that began in 1844, a year that by any other account was unremarkable, save for the failure of Jesus to appear? Of course, this begs the question of just what Daniel 8:14 is referring to. We feel that we must have that answer because, one, we believe that this is the time of the end, and two, the final chapter of Daniel says the book will be unsealed at the time of the end in Daniel 12:9. Because Adventism claims to be the end time remnant of Revelation 12:17, that implies that we must therefore have the correct understanding of the unsealed book of Daniel. We cannot then abide by any ambiguity regarding Daniel 8:14. But reality challenges us even there, for there's plenty of ambiguity regarding understanding of Daniel chapter 11. It may be presumption, then, to assert that we are the people who have been specially chosen to open Daniel to the world. We may be just as wrong about the imminence of the parousia as were the first century believers. But while an individual may come to admit they were wrong and take a more enlightened path as a natural part of spiritual growth, it is much more difficult, if not impossible, for a corporation supported by millions of members to do so, especially if that corporation is dependent upon the continued financial support of those members for its existence. Perhaps this is why Christianity tends to progress by the establishment of new denominations instead of through reformation of the existing ones. Even the Great Reformation of the 16th century was more an exodus from the Roman Church rather than a welcome invitation to actual reformation from within. It begs the question whether each denomination in turn must pass through that gate to progress. In any event, in the previous chapter, I have offered a meaning for Daniel 8:14 contemporary to the events transpiring when the book was likely written. Daniel, as we have it today, was very much a product of the Maccabean revolt, and that context provides us with keys to understanding the meaning and purpose of the text, again, as addressed in the last chapter of our commentary. While there is little doubt that a judgment precedes Christ's return in order to enable Revelation 22, verse 12, there is no indication that setting a date for a beginning for such judgment has any relevance at all to salvation or the second advent. What possible difference could it make if such judgment began in 1844 or 1910 or any other subsequent date? Perhaps it is time to toss such theological date setting into the rubbish bin of history. The imminence of the second coming does not need that to be apparent, for the signs repeatedly mentioned in the Bible abound around us. Let's stop the date setting and prepare. It may be sooner than we think. Thank you for listening to this commentary. You may find more podcasts at www.visitstillwaters.com.